Like Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Teich. The issue of human trafficking is a significant one in 2013 between human rights abuses in places such as Sudan and global prostitution and internet pornography rings. A sting operation earlier this year saved 10 victims of human trafficking right here in Wisconsin. Writer Amy Tan's latest novel plays out in a different place and in an earlier era, one in which the sex industry was somewhat more out in the open, if not any less insidious. The Valley of Amazement plays out mainly in China early in the 20th century. It tells the story of one family's roles in the courtesan world. It examines mother-daughter relationships, betrayal and loss, and has a helping of dark humor as well. Amy Tan joined us in the studio recently to share her first novel in just about a decade. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Good to be here.
I was hoping you could start by explaining the significance of courtesans in Shanghai in the period in which most of this book is set.
The courtesans of Shanghai started around in the 1850s when this Shanghai was getting started. They are different levels. If you look at the continuum of the sex trade, there were first-class courtesans, second-class, maybe flower opium houses, women who took in people in their own homes, and then also streetwalkers, and then down to the sex slaves who were in the sheds. So it was about one out of every 100 women in Shanghai at one period were in the sex trade. Courtesans, one of the key differences also is that they were courted. They had many suitors who came, and the woman got to choose who would have their favors in the boudoir.
And in the case of a so-called first-class courtesan house, this was a fairly elite clientele.
They would be the top officials, the business people who would come, people who were doing foreign trade, which is a huge thing that was going on in Shanghai during that early 20th century. And I imagine they were privy to the secrets that people were talking about.
Well, and the house where much of the formative moments, many of the formative moments of the story is set, the Hidden Jade Path or the House of Lulu Mimi, is at the nexus of Shanghai and Western influences. Was that emblematic of courtesan culture, at least at the first class level?
What I found out is that they were very influential in bringing Western culture into Shanghai, making at least furniture, food and things like that acceptable. And I could only imagine that they would possibly help bridge the gap in other ways in business. The actual house that allowed Western men to come in and be there in a sort of social club, and Chinese men coming in for the first-class courtesan house atmosphere, that was made up. I made that up with bridging the two cultures, because usually Chinese people and Western people didn't do anything socially together. Business, yes. Social, no.
And you set this in what was known as the international settlement, which I don't know that many people are aware of. This was a part of Shanghai where Westerners lived essentially as Westerners among Westerners.
Yeah, it was like its own separate enclave, its own country. It operated by its own laws, its own police, the British police, the American laws. And they were basically insulated throughout the beginning of the war until, for the U.S., December 7th, 1941, then they became part of Japanese territory. Otherwise, they were immune. And the courtesan houses were located in the international settlement. I didn't know it until recently that our family home was located there as well. So Chinese people lived there, but it was mostly set up for the foreigners.
And you mentioned your family home. If I'm not mistaken, the spark that set you on the road to writing this novel was a photograph you saw at a gallery that reminded you of one that you had seen many, many times.
I found it actually in a book after going to an Asian art museum exhibit on Shanghai. And I turned the page. I was looking. I thought it was so interesting. The women were so influential and powerful. And I turned the page and I saw 10 beauties of Shanghai, these 10 young women, five of them wearing an outfit identical to the outfit my grandmother is wearing in my favorite photo of her that I looked at every day as I wrote for inspiration.
And at the time before then, you had no idea the significance of the outfit she wore.
I just thought it was a beautiful outfit. And this outfit was specific to courtesans. I read on. I thought, well, maybe it was a popular fashion. But it was a headband that came to a V at the top of the forehead, a tight jacket, collar went to just below the earlobe, tight sleeves, lining showing, very specific, and the most interesting, taken in a Western photo studio with pots of flowers around it. And I talked to three academics, and it was the Western photo studio that was the most significant.
And that's because typically there was no reason for a Chinese woman to be in a Western photo studio?
It just wasn't proper. The only women who went there were courtesans. The furniture was Western. They did poses that were not traditional. And the contrast to me, the effect of looking at this had a lot to do with the family stories about my grandmother, that she was old-fashioned, traditional, quiet. And the one thing I got out of this was she was not old-fashioned. Whether she was a courtesan, I would never be able to say for sure unless I saw a written document that she signed. It opened up a huge mystery of who this woman was. And that was the more important question, not what she did, but who she was. Not quiet, not traditional. And I found out through doing a lot more research, she had very strong opinions.
Was telling the story a way for you to fill in the gaps in your grandmother's real story? Or did you simply take this element of ambiguity and then use it to craft something from whole cloth?
I did the latter, using the ambiguity, using the contradictions in the family stories, because I find that contradictions and ambiguity are the place where stories begin. I decided I would craft a completely different story. But what's similar is that these are women who found themselves thrown into a different situation. Suddenly their circumstances are changed, their lives upturned, and how would they have to remake themselves? What parts of them would always remain the same? What is their character? Who are they? That is the question I have of my grandmother. It is not her narrative. It is not about whether she really was a courtesan. So there are courtesans and they are different people.
Well, and certainly to put someone in the position of a woman in that era, in that place, needing to remake herself, there were not a lot of options.
No, you couldn't. What happened to a lot of these courtesans, some of them came from very well-to-do families, and the families lost all their wealth. What could they do? Lost the husband, had no support. Or they were kidnapped, girls who were kidnapped. Or, you know, their mothers had always been courtesans. But you couldn't just leave the courtesan house, go to school, and get a job as a teacher. You had to be born into a certain class, have a very modern family who decided to educate you. Or you were born into a servant class. I don't think people always understand that. You don't, in certain cultures and times, you didn't have a choice.
And certainly for Violet, who is the central character in most of the story, she is part American and part Chinese, which puts her in an even less advantageous position in Shanghai at this time.
Yeah. Mixed race girls, as they sometimes call them, or Eurasians, were looked down on both sides, you know, tainted in two ways. And a lot of them ended up in orphanages, never got adopted, never could marry. Learned how to weave by the missionaries. So Violet was in a tenuous situation and somehow makes her way into the world, finding her place as a courtesan.
How much contemporary writing exists from that time about how these houses worked?
There is one particular book that I used. It was by a journalist in 1893 who visited courtesan houses every night. And he wrote fiction, but it was really based on his experiences. And that, to me, was the window into what really happened, the real life, the grievances, the competition, the jealousies, the men who were unfaithful and going off with other courtesans, the gifts that were required, that sort of thing. There were other books that had been written in the 1800s. So that's what I depended on, the fiction that was written.
There's a section of the book where you go into great detail about the hypothetical storytelling techniques a courtesan might use to seduce a patron, which is both hilarious and more than a little horrifying. And I'm curious whether it is entirely your imagination or whether it was inspired by some contemporary writing.
That was my imagination. But there is a story. It's a real story. Peach Blossom Spring. Right. Everybody knows that story. If you're Chinese and a kid, you grow up with it. And I just imagine the different ways you could tell that story, eroticize it a little. And that was probably a profane, you know, sacrilegious, tell this famous story as a seduction piece.
Although it is interesting, it leads one to start thinking about any number of Western fairy tales in the same way.
Yeah. I am sure Little Red Riding Hood could be turned into something like that.
On a more serious level, do you see a difference between the courtesan culture that existed at the turn of the last century in its time and place and the issues of sexual slavery and human trafficking that exist today?
Sex slavery is a huge problem. I'd say it's one of the top five, at least top 10 in the world. And in the United States, people think it's only in other countries. Sex slavery existed back then. Of course, little girls were kidnapped, or uncles or brothers would sell these girls. It was huge. So courtesans, actually, if they were kidnapped and became courtesans, they were quite lucky. They were courtesans who had freedoms after a while. They could get up when they wanted, design their own clothes, go out in public, ride in carriages, create themselves as seductresses and become businesswomen, negotiators. Whereas sex slaves, these little girls, 9 years old, they had to turn maybe 20 tricks a day. Horrible life, died young.
Was there inspiration for you for the painting from which this book takes its name?
I was in Berlin and doing a quick tour of the National Gallery, and I came across this painting called The Valley of Amazement. And it was so – it was that ambiguity we talked about where it was – it looked like a storm was coming or leaving. It looked like it was dawn or dusk. It was at once forbidding and maybe hopeful, and I was trying to decide, did the painter intend one or the other? Were we leaving or arriving? And I thought it was such a wonderful metaphor later that I wanted to use it as the title of the book because it captured what I found happens to all of us. We're at a crossroads. We have to see something. What are we really seeing? And we have to decide and go forward or leave. I saw another painting that was very much like that by Albert Bierstadt, who's an American painter, the Hudson River Valley School of Painting in the 1800s. And it was very similar, a storm, valley, dawn or dusk. That one looked more hopeful. You know, so he was an artist that I put in there. Unfortunately, I didn't note the name of the German artist. I'm sure the people in Germany, once it's translated, of course, it was Carl Blecken. How could you not know?
I'm curious. There is much that is unpleasant that plays out in the nearly 600 pages that make up the book. You know, there's rape and violence and betrayal. How do you, as a writer, when you're immersed in your work, how do you compartmentalize, be able to maintain this overall picture of yourself and where the book is going, and also channel the difficult stuff that's coming out of your pen or your fingers?
Well, for one thing, I do have a character who's a little bit more humorous, Magic Gordon, who's a sidekick who's very much like my mother in her voice. But all of those things that you talked about, the abandonment, rape, suicide, all of that was part of our family history. And I put it in there because it's meaningful to me. I also didn't want to glorify the sex trade. That would be very, very wrong. And here's the reality of what it is. Yes, they had a glamorous life, but here's what they're facing in the future. The life of the courtesan lasted very briefly from the age of, say, 14 or 15 until the early 20s. So I take these very bad situations, and I try to keep in mind with respect this was a life of women back then. And it's really to honor them for what they went through and for giving us, their descendants, a kind of strength that was passed on from one woman to her daughter to her granddaughter. And that's in me.
Amy Tan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Amy Tan's latest novel is called The Valley of Amazement. It was just included on the New York Times list of 100 notable books of 2013. She was in Milwaukee recently for an event at Alverno College and to visit her sister, who lives just west of town. That's Tuesday's edition of Lake Effect. Speaking of books, Lake Effect gardening contributor Melinda Myers has a bumper crop of new titles. We'll hear about them and much more on tomorrow's show. I'm Mitch Tyke. It's so great to have you listening today, as it always is. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I hope you'll be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. We're NPR in Milwaukee. Keep listening. It's 11 o'clock, and fresh air comes your way next.